So today morning we are discussing from the 10th canto, 61st chapter, where the chapter's title theme will come later. Now the division of the Bhagavatam, or for that matter of any scripture, into chapters is something which was not done in the original narration. It is not that when Krishna was speaking the Bhagavad Gita, now ataha dvitiyo adhyaya, that now I am starting the second adhyaya, now the second adhyaya is complete. It is a flowing narration. So, because it is a flowing narration, that's why the division of chapters has been done by subsequent editors. So, Vyasa, when he put it down into writing, at that time he did the division. And in general, in the traditional division, there is never a nomenclature. So there is just the division. This chapter gets over, this chapter starts. That's why if we look at, say, the Sandarbhas or any of the pre-modern commentaries on the scripture, they usually don't contain the chapter title. Just say, Iti Bhagavatam Dvadasho Adhyaya. So they, the commentators often don't even bother to give the specific verse number. And they don't give the chapter title also. So chapter titling is something that has been done later. And in fact, Srila Prabhupada himself was also quite open to revision of chapter titles. If we see that the previous acharyas, if we even read Bhagavad Gita, the chapter titles in Baldev Vidya Bhushan's Gita Bhushan are different from what is then Vishnu Acharya Thakur Sararth Varshini. And they are different from what is then Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is. In fact, if we go further, we'll find that the chapter titles in Krishna book are different from the chapter titles in 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So then I had written to Hridayanand Maharaj to ask about this. So he said that actually Prabhupada had prepared Prabhupada translated the first 14 chapters. And in the first 14 chapters itself, Prabhupada was open to a chapter title modification. He did not just take the exact titles from the 10th canto, when Prabhupada, from the Krishna book. So there are some chapters where, especially if you go to 18, 19 chapters, I won't go into the details right now, but sometimes a chapter has two distinct themes. So one acharya may focus on one theme and another acharya may focus on another theme. So for example, if you look at the first chapter, in general, if you look at, there are about first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, if you look at it, there are, as of now, within the tradition, means within the four Vaishnava Sampradayas, there are, as far as are available now, there are 73 commentaries available. So there are many more which are not, the manuscripts are also not available right now, within the Vaishnava Sampradaya itself. So out of the 73, around roughly 50, 36 commentaries use the first half of the Bhagavad Gita's first chapter to give a title. That means Sainya Niriksha Yoga. The roughly the other half use the second half, and they call it as Arjun Vishada Yoga. So, that means the titling of the chapters is often dependent on what the particular commentator considers as the important message within that particular chapter. So, now, especially when a flowing story is being recited, the 10th canto is basically a recitation of a story. So, if we see here, the theme of this particular chapter, that Lord Krishna slays, Lord Balaram slays Rukmi, that has not yet approached at all. In fact, in that theme, that is a specific pastime, which will come much later, after what is going on currently, is the description of the genealogy of Krishna, of the progeny of Krishna. So, in fact, that particular pastime will happen, it's organically related in terms of chronological flow. That after describing his sons, when Krishna will describe the marriages of his sons, at that time, this particular pastime will happen. So that's how, at one level, the genealogy and then the specific chronological event, they are connected. Now, in the later part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, especially after Krishna leaves Vrindavan, the Bhagavatam is not necessarily chronological. It is more of sphurti based. It's based on the inspirational remembrance that is rising in the heart of Sukadeva Goswami, that he speaks pastimes. So that's why between the chronology, you know, for the sons to be born and afterwards the sons to get married. A lot of events have happened in between. But here, it's just moving from that way. It's not chronological moment. It is more of a conceptual or thematic moment that is happening here. So, now here is described that Krishna had 10 sons from each of his wives. So, in the Rig Veda, it is described that every human being has three primary duties. The Vedas, if we see, they do not focus on paradharma. They do not focus primarily on the relationship with the absolute truth. Because they are focusing on karmakanda, dharma artha kama. In fact, there are some Hindu atheists, whatever that word means, it's like oxymoron, somebody being a Hindu atheist. But they quote an infamous passage from the, infamous or famous, whatever you want to say, passage from the Rig Veda, which says that, you know, is there a supreme being or is there not? Does he know or does he not know? No one knows. So, this they say that actually the Vedas are themselves open to atheism also. They argue for this. The point is that not that the Vedas are not Vedas are supporting atheism in any way. But the point is in the Vedas themselves, because karmakanda is the emphasis, so the point is not to know the absolute truth. No, we know primarily about the Vedanta Sutra. The Vedanta Sutra begins with Athato Brahma Jigyasa. Like that, there are sutras for each of the six systems of thought. So there is Mimamsaka Sutra. And Mimamsaka Sutra begins with Athato Dharma Jigyasa. Because the primary focus over there is, now the word Dharma in Indian philosophy has been analyzed to have 376 meanings. And these are authentic meanings as they are found in the Indian, in the scriptures itself. So, Prabhupada focused on one particular meaning. But if we look at the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada said that dharma refers to our innate nature. But in, that is not the only sense in which the word word is used in Bhagavad Gita. Because if something were, if dharma meant only our innate nature, then Krishna's direct instruction, sarva dharman parityajya, will make no sense. How can we give up our nature? So the point which I am making here is that each sutra or each set of thought has a particular emphasis. So the particular emphasis is that, say in Mimamsa Sutra, it is Thato Brahma Dharma Jigyasa. So what is dharma? And dharma refers to essentially those activities by which one can get artha and kama. That is what dharma is referred to. So the point I am making over here is that from the Vedic perspective, the three duties which are considered important, and those are the duties to the sages, the duties to the gods, and the duties to the ancestors. So, the duties to the sages are that a person studies the message that they have got, that the sages have given us, study the scripture and serve the sages. The duty to the devatas is that one perform yajnas. And the duty to the ancestors is that one begets progeny and continues the dynasty. And that's why we will see repeatedly in the Puranas as well as the Itihasas, if a king is not able to beget progeny, the king is in great anxiety because it's a dharmic duty to be completed. So Krishna, as I mentioned in my class last time, that when Krishna descends to this world, when Krishna descends to this world, he demonstrates the contemporary definition of success. Because if people are to be attracted, nobody is attracted to somebody who has nothing outstanding about them oneself. So people are attracted to that which is outstanding. So Krishna demonstrates his outstanding, how he's outstanding. And he demonstrates how he's outstanding in the contemporary terms. So now from the Vedic definition of success, for a king to have many sons is a sign of great success. That means that person has been able to expand one's dynasty in a very successful way. So this Krishna's begetting 10 sons from each of his primary queens. That's what is mentioned over here. Some of them are mentioned over here. This is how Krishna is demonstrating the contemporary Vedic definition of success. So Krishna, of course, demonstrates transcendental love also, which he does in the Vrindavan pastimes. Now I will focus on this particular verse, on this last line. Sambhadya Pitra Sammataha, that they were especially regarded or favored by Krishna. So it's referring here to Samba and other sons of Jambavati who were favored by Krishna. So the topic I'll discuss is, does God have favorites? Does God have favorites? And I'll discuss this in four divisions. First I'll talk about the philosophical implications of God's favoritism or non-favoritism. Then I will discuss about the analysis of this in terms of rasa in the transcendental realm. Then I'll discuss about how in our practical life favoritism can lead to undesirable results. And in this world, you know, when we are practicing devotional service, we are in the material world, we are practicing spiritual life. So there can be the positive results of transcendental favoritism and there can be negative results of mundane favoritism. So how do we negotiate our way through that while living in this world? That will be the last part we'll discuss. So firstly, from the philosophical point of view, favoritism is a word which has strongly negative connotations. Like it is there, right there with things like nepotism. Nepotism is somebody favors one's relatives. You know, if a person becomes a minister, then all the relatives get jobs or get some positions or get some perks. So nepotism is considered in bad taste. And similarly, favoritism is also considered to be in bad taste. Now that, why is favoritism considered to be in bad taste? Because it's, you know, you like someone, so you favor that person. That's partiality. There should be equal opportunity. And we understand that in a sense that, you know, if in a class there are students and, you know, if a teacher likes some student and because of that the teacher gives more marks to the student, even if the student doesn't actually do well in the exam, then you say this is bad, this is favoritism. So there is one thing, that favoritism that arises from partiality, and that is definitely unfair because that leads to discrimination against some people not based on the person's inherited qualifications, but based on just a person's, the examining or the authority person's preferences. That is undesirable. And at one level, God does not have any favorites. Samoham sarva bhuteshu namai dveshyosti na priya. That he does not have any favorites. He is equipoised towards all living beings. Samoham. Sama is samyata, is what Krishna recommends in the Bhagavad Gita repeatedly. In fact, this samoham sarvabhuteshu comes in 9.29. But before that, Krishna has said in 5.19 that if people acquire samya, then they can become liberated. In fact, if one has acquired samya, then one is already liberated. Iha ivatair jitaha sargo yesham samye sthitam manaha nirdosham hi samam brahma tasmat brahmanite sthitaha ihaivatair jitaha sargo. Ihaiva, in this world itself, jitaha sargo, one has conquered over material existence if yesham samye sthitam manaha, those who are situated in samya, those who are situated in equanimity. Prabhupada translates samya as sameness. So samye sthitam manaha nirdosham hi samam brahma. So here he says that this samya, those who have samya, they are flawless, nirdosha. And then they are samam brahma. They are equivalent to Brahma. That means what is implied is Brahma is also sama. Brahma, the absolute truth, is also samya. Is characterized by samya. Tasmat brahmanite sthitaha. And because they are like Brahma, so therefore they are situated in Brahma right now. So essentially Krishna says that sameness or equal-mindedness in dealing with things, dealing with people, that is a characteristic of that qualifies one for liberation. So this is in the 5th chapter. In the 6th chapter, Krishna talks about sameness with respect to things and sameness with respect to people. In 6.8, he talks about sameness with respect to things. He says, Jnana Vijnana Triptatma Kutastho Vijitendriya Yukta Ityuchyate Yogi Samaloshtra Ashmakanchanah. Samaloshtra Ashmakanchanah. That's the person sees stone, pebbles and gold equally. And then in 6.9, Krishna states, next level. So seeing things equally is tough. But it's possible. And if a person is detached from things, a person can see things equally. But even tougher is to see people equally. And that's why Krishna in the next verse says that seeing people equally is higher. Suhurun mitrarya udasina madhyastha dvesha bandhushu sadhushu apicha papeshu samabuddhir vishishyate samabuddhir. One who has samabuddhi towards all these different kinds of people. Suhurun mitrarya udasina. One who is a friend, who is an intimate friend, one who is a nominal friend, one who is an enemy, one who is neutral, one who is a mediator, one who is envious, one who is pious, one who is sinful, one who is virtuous. If one has equally disposed toward him, such a person is higher, vishishyate, is better, vishishyate. So essentially, there is repeated point mentioned by Krishna that being equipoised towards things and towards people is a desirable spiritual qualification on the path of progress. So in general, you know, if we consider the spiritual progression to be like a movement on the ordinate, on the y-axis, there is negative axis, there is zero, and there is positive axis. So on the negative axis, there is favoritism that comes from partiality. And that is undesirable. Even from the normal life's point of view, it is undesirable. And even from the point of a spiritual growth, it is undesirable. And so from that negative axis, one comes to zero. One develops samatha. But in the transcendental realm, there is another kind of favoritism that arises not from partiality, but from personality. From personality means that Krishna is a person. And as a person, he has his personal preferences. And that's why Krishna loves cows. You know, one of the things that people outside the Hindu tradition just can't understand is, why do you Hindus consider cow to be so holy, so sacred? In fact, this incomprehension about the sanctity of the cow has expanded to become a metaphor. So holy cow, anything that is irrationally valued, that is referred to as a holy cow. So it's become a phrase in the English language. So for example, before the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, now there were some fights between the two warring Russian groups, and there was some remote part of Siberia which was of no value to anyone, but still thousands and thousands of soldiers were devoted to that, and you know, they're trying to protect that area. No strategic value, no economic value, no population demographic value, no value. But so it is said that particular area is the holy cow of both these parties. That means what? There is no rationality beyond for valuing this, but still it's valued. So the idea of a holy cow is just not comprehended. Why? Because the holiness of the cow is appreciated primarily in the Vedic tradition in terms of the personality of Krishna. Krishna is a person and he loves cows. And that's why devotees, or not even necessarily even devotees, in general pious Hindus, they value cow. It is because because Krishna values cows. Now for people who are not within the circumference of appreciating Krishna's personality. Now for them to understand why we appreciate cows can be very difficult. And for that reason, we may give secondary reasons. For helping them to appreciate, we may give secondary reasons. we may say that, yes, actually, Prabhupada, actually, many people nowadays give the economic reason. You know, the cow can be so valuable and this and that and that, and how cow, cow dung, cow urine, all that is very valuable. And things like that. Prabhupada took a slightly different tone. He focused on the emotional value. A cow gives milk, it's like a cow is like a mother. So therefore, you should value cows. So, there's one Christian preacher who has like systematically critiqued all of the teachings of Prabhupada. He's written a whole book criticizing this. So one of the arguments, one by one he takes this. So he says that this worship of the cow, it reflects the irrational mentality of Hindus to worship the creation instead of the creator. To worship the creation instead of the creator. You may say that the cow, you equate the cow with the mother. But the cow does not have the affection that the mother has. The mother loves the child and the mother gives her milk because the child, because she loves the child. Now the cow's milk is taken out and it is eaten by someone else. And the cow's love is not for the human being who is taking the milk. The cow's love is for her own calf. So for humans to treat the cow as a mother is just a sentimental imagination. Because there is no maternal bond between the cow and the humans who are drinking her milk. So here, this particular reasoning, the flaw in the reasoning is that in the Christian tradition, there is a big divorce between the creation and the creator. That God is considered so transcendental that he cannot be depicted or he cannot be perceived in anything in this world. So that's why in this tradition, there is one of the commandments, thou shalt not make any graven image of God. That is, not make any, that don't depict God, because God cannot be depicted by any means. So this divorce between the creation and the creator, now of course this is not there within all Christian denominations, although it is there in many prominent Christian denominations. But the point is, it's not that devotees, when they hold a cow sacred, it's not that they are replacing the creator with the creation and making the creation the object of worship. There are, even if you want to go from a purely philosophical perspective, it is not, nowhere in any temple will you find that the cow is replacing Krishna on the altar. The cow, so it is not misdirection of worship from the creation to the creator, from the creator to the creation. Rather, the cow represents the intimate connection of the creation with the creator. We don't just see the creation as a gift of the creator. That is true. Yes, if the world and its resources were not there, then we would not be able to live in this world. Even if we had been created, but the world had not been created, then we would not be able to survive. So at one level, the creation is the gift of the creator to the creatures. But the appreciation of the cow is not just at that level. No, Krishna's affection for the cow arises from his personality and the cows in this world, which are manifestations of the Surabhi cows, which are there with Krishna in the spiritual world. They demonstrate to us the intimate bond that is there between Krishna and his creatures. So, we have to understand that the cow is not just valuable economically, his cow is valuable not just maternally, the cow is valuable because she is valuable to Krishna. We value the cow because she is dear to Krishna. And the valuing of the cow is not because we are replacing the creation with the creator, but we are recognizing the connection of the creation with the creator, not just in utilitarian terms from our perspective. Oh, the creation is a big gift for us. No, we are recognizing the connection of the creation with the creator in terms of the creator's personal nature and personality. So because Krishna loves cows, so we love cows. Now, is this Krishna's favoritism? You know, Krishna loves cows, so does that mean that Krishna doesn't love elephants, Krishna doesn't love dogs, Krishna doesn't love all the other creatures? There is in the transcendental realm, if there is no personality, there cannot be any personality without personal preferences. Now, what do we mean by personality? Now, is it just how a person looks? If it were just looks, then we could say a statue has personality. You know, how much personality does a statue have? You know, it's not just looks. It's also the actions. And not just the actions. The action replay, actions represent a person's inclinations. So, a person's likes and dislikes, in this world, likes and dislikes go together. Icha and dvesha. Likes and dislikes are what go together. Whereas, in the transcendental realm, what is there is not likes and dislikes, like and like more. There is like more and like most. Just like we have Krishna in Dwarka, is perfect. Krishna in Mathura is more perfect. Krishna in Vrindavan is the most perfect. So, it is not, at the transcendental realm, there is no negative side to the duality. Even the negative is positive. That means, rather saying this is like and this is dislike, it's all is like, but within like there are gradations of liking. So before we go understand this point of Krishna's personal preferences, let's look at the human-divine relationship from the other perspective. We are looking at, before we can appreciate it from the divine perspective, let's try to understand it from the human perspective. So, Prabhupada talks about in the 13th chapter of the Gita, he hints at it, this is an Upanishadic approach. There are two ways to understand the absolute truth. One is, three ways broadly actually. One is we look upwards, we try to understand broadly the nature of the cosmos. Second is we look outwards and try to look at nature. So we look upwards, we try to use philosophically infer first cause. We look outwards, that means we look at nature and then we try to understand. Okay, from nature we try to, from the creation we try to understand something about the creator. And the third is look inwards. That means we look at our own nature, and because we are creations of God, so by understanding our nature, we can get some understanding of Krishna's nature also. So, in the transcendental relationship, it is described that one of the defining characteristics of the Vedic, of the Bhakti Marga, is the concept of Ishta Daivat. Ishta Daivat means what? Yeah, that there is God who has many manifestations. And devotees, based on their devotees become purified and come to their transcendental nature becomes awakened, then they are attracted to a particular form of the Lord. Yadyad dhiya torugaya vibhavayanti tattadvapuh praniyase sadanugrahaya. Brahmaji, in his prayers for creative power, while he is appreciating the Supreme Lord, he says, Yadyadhya, with whatever inclination, with whatever intelligence, to Urugaya Vibhavayanti. Urugaya, that Lord who is glorified in wonderful ways, Vibhavayanti, they try to worship him, they try to appease him. Tattadvapuhu praniyase, tattadvapuhu, that particular form, praniyase, is manifested. Sad anugrahaya, out of being merciful to the sad, to the devotees. So what this means is that Krishna does not consider it in any way a defect. See, if Brahmaji is offering his prayers to the Lord, and what he is saying, you are so merciful that according to the way the devotee desires to worship you, you manifest a corresponding form. So what is he saying? He is saying that you are so sensitive that you reciprocate with the devotee's desire. And that means this desire, vibhavayanti, this particular form of worship, is something which the Lord appreciates and reciprocates with. So, when, say, a devotee's Ishtadaivat is Krishna, that does not mean that the devotee dislikes Ram. It does not mean that the devotee dislikes Vishnu. It's just that, so as I said, like, more like and most like. And we see this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu respects this. And when There are two examples of this. One is Murari Gupta, who was a worshipper of Ram, and similarly there was the brother of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, who was also the worshipper of Ram, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually appreciates both of them. So the point here is, even in the transcendental realm, devotees have their personal nature. And based on their personal nature, there will be personal preferences. And Krishna appreciates those preferences. So similarly, now in this human-divine relationship, let's shift to the other perspective. You know, if we can have our personal preferences accommodated within the transcendental realm, then can Krishna's personal preferences not be accommodated? Surely they can, and they should be accommodated. So Krishna's personal preferences are actually what make his personality tangible, concrete, actual. If Krishna did not have any personal preferences, then there is no special opportunity to express one's affection. You know, if we want to do something special for some devotee, then you know maybe that devotee's birthday is there and we want to offer something to him. So if we want to find out, you know, what does the devotee, maybe if we want to give some prasad, try to find what prasad item does the devotee like. We want to give that prasad to that devotee. So the point is that when a person, if somebody says, no, whatever you give me, that's fine. Yes, that's okay, but you tell me what you like. He says, no, whatever you give me, it's okay. Then, yes, that is at one level we can say detached, but then there is no special opportunity to express one's affection in a special way. So if you find out, okay, what this person likes and we offer that, then there is a special furthering of the tie in the relationship that happens. So same way, Krishna's personal nature and his personal preferences lead to greater affection, greater opportunity for reciprocation and a deeper bonding, deeper relationship with him. So this is from the point of view of the philosophical understanding. That Krishna's, if Krishna has any favorites, that is not because of his partiality, that is because of his personality. Partiality means you are good, you are bad. Personality and preference means good, better, best. It's not good and bad. So, of course, this is a much more elaborate subject. I'll have to rush through some of the points which I wanted to discuss. So, now, is it that one is from the point of view of appreciating philosophically, but what about emotionally? Do the devotees who are, say, in the good category for Krishna, is it that they feel that we miss out something because we are not in the best category? Is it in the spiritual world, the Krishna is Gopal? So does that mean the deer or the peacocks or the parrots, they feel, oh, Krishna doesn't love us? No, it's not like that. Because Krishna is omnipotent. And because he is omnipotent, he can keep everyone satisfied in whatever relationship they are. So the devotees don't crave for something else. Not only do devotees not crave for something else, even devotees themselves don't engage in this one-upsmanship. No, I am in a higher rasa than you. It's not that the devotees are competing like that. We see this very beautifully depicted in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, in the second part where the Gopakumar goes to the spiritual world. So when he goes to, first to Vaikuntha, then to Ayodhya, then to Dwarka, and eventually he comes to Vrindavan. So it's interesting that in Vaikuntha, in Dwarka, in Ayodhya, all three places, the devotees over there of those particular forms of Vishnu, Ram and Dwarkadish Krishna, all those devotees consider their worshipable Lord to be the be-all and end-all. In fact, it is said that the devotees in Vaikuntha think that Krishna is the incarnation of Vishnu. Vishnu is the be-all and end-all. And Sanatana Goswami, it is not minimizing. Oh, actually they are an illusion. It is Krishna who is the highest. He doesn't do that. There is room in the transcendental realm for transcendental subjectivity. And that subjectivity is based not on some illusions created by subjective perception. They are based on the arrangement of Krishna for having personal reciprocation with everyone. That is Krishna's perfection by which he enables everyone to be satisfied. So in the Raghavartma Chandrika, it is explained that there are two different kinds of devotees even in the Madhurya Ras. I will not go into terminology here, simply we'll put it, we have gopis and we have manjaris. So the gopis are those who directly reciprocate with Krishna. And the manjaris are those who observe. So now, is it that those who are observing are missing out? They are not as intimate with Krishna as those who are actually interacting with him? So, Chakravarti Pad explains that those who are observing, Krishna arranges that by which they can get greater happiness. How is it? Because they can experience both from the gopi's perspective and from Krishna's perspective. So you observe, oh, how much Krishna is loving this gopi, how much this gopi is happy. And I say, this gopi is loving Krishna, how much Krishna is happy. So the point is that nobody misses out on anything because of Krishna's personal preferences. No, Krishna is Rasaraj and he ensures that everyone is transcendentally satisfied. So now, how does all this play out in our lives? You know, is the spiritual master equal to all? You know, Prabhupada asked this question. I said, do you love all your disciples equally? Prabhupada said, yes. And then he added, but if someone comes forward to take up responsibility, I reciprocate. If someone comes forward to take up responsibility, I reciprocate. What does it mean? That the reciprocation is not something which should be equated with partiality. A father may love all of one's children equally, but if there are some children who are very responsible, who share the father's load, who take up the father's responsibilities, share in the family, naturally the father will feel special affection for that particular child. So there is there is the point that Krishna or the spiritual masters spiritual master actually one offers all equal facilities to everyone, but there is the principle of reciprocation. And we see that Srila Prabhupada was in his final days, several devotees asked him to appoint a successor. So not devotees, several of the Hindu well-wishers, life members and others, who will be a successor, Swamiji? Prabhupada gave different answers, but one answer he gave several times was that whoever wants to be my successor. Means Prabhupada did not consider a succession in material terms. Who gets the property of ISKCON? Who gets to become a trustee of ISKCON? Prabhupada, what is the legacy that the spiritual master gives to the disciple? The legacy is the desire to serve and glorify Krishna. Now, Prabhupada did not get anything of the Gaudiya Math. But what he got was the desire to glorify Krishna. And from that desire to glorify Krishna, everything else manifested. Temples manifested, books manifested, devotees manifested. So that is the essential legacy of the spiritual master, the desire to serve Krishna. That's why Prabhupada said, whoever wants to accept my legacy is waiting for them. Another point may come up here, from the point of view of reciprocation, that is fine. That, yes, whoever takes up more responsibility, that person will get, more association with the spiritual master, more opportunity for associating, serving, things like that. But there can be, you know, when we are in this world, our spiritual personality is not yet being awakened. But we also have to use our material swabhava in Krishna's service. So we will serve according to whatever nature we have, whatever talents we have. And it may well happen that when we are trying to serve Krishna and we are in a particular project where the leader of the project, whoever it may, or we may be in a particular department or in a particular situation where the leader has a particular focus. So we may have a set of talents that are different from what is required for that project. And someone else may have some talents which are exactly suited for that project. So it may not be that we don't want to take up responsibility, but it's just that we don't have the competence to take up that kind of responsibility which is required in that particular project. So it may appear that, oh, I am not getting the association of some devotee whose association I want, because, oh, this devotee, you know, cares so much for this devotee, I don't care for. We may find that because of this, we may feel left out or may feel neglected. So here, there are two different things to be understood. When such thing happens, it can cause heartburn unless we understand our philosophy properly. First is that Bhakti Vinod Thakur says, Rupa Goswami also says this in the Bhakti Sama Sindhu, that it is, we don't just need Sangha, we need Sajatiya Asha Snigdha Sangha. Sajatiya Asha. Sajatiya Asha means those who have the same category of desire that we have. Snigdha, affectionate. Sajatiya Asha Snigdha Sangha. So the association that we need is of affectionate devotees who have similar desires. Now it's interesting now, is it that our desire should be similar to our authority, or we should find an authority whose desires are similar to ours? What does it mean? Who is the same category of desires? What does it actually mean? So in general, especially in the early stages of our spiritual life, it is difficult for us to find out what our nature is. Because generally, one of the characteristics of the mode of passion is to always think that the grass on the other side is greener. So every service is better than the service that I am doing. Why? Because when we actually start doing a service, we find out that there are so many challenges in doing that service. So many things to be done. And as compared to that, somebody else is doing some other service. You know, it's such a nice service. So nice, you can do so many things. But then actually when you go into that service, then we find out, oh, there is so much to do. I never knew. So what happens when we are in passion? Usually, the nature of passion is, at one level we say the passion, we want to do a lot. But actually passion is not just that we want to do a lot, we want the world to know that I am doing a lot. So, it is not that I am doing a lot, whether the world knows I am doing a lot, that is what is more important in passion. And because of that, we are too eager for results. And we want something to be done visibly. And so, the point which I am making here is, when there is too much passion, Rajoguna, at that time we can't perceive actually what our nature is. So, in general, it is best for us to serve according to whatever instructions we get. Whatever services we are given, we do that. But Prabhupada says in the introduction of Nectar of Instruction that by the practice of bhakti, one will come to the mode of goodness. And once one comes to the mode of goodness, then how to advance further will be revealed from within. What that means is that once we come to goodness, we'll start understanding what is our nature. Okay, these are my strengths, these are my limitations, and these are the ways which I can serve best. So, over a period of time, as we keep practicing bhakti, we will recognize that there are certain things which I can do well, there are certain things which I can't do so well. And then, we will have some choices to make, some decisions to make. Now, if we want some devotee's association, and we feel very deprived because of not getting that devotee's association, then we will have to work to develop the particular kind of talents so that we can assist that devotee in whatever service that those particular devotees are doing. Then we can get the association. But if you feel that, oh, my nature is too different, and I just don't have the talents for doing this service, I don't have the abilities, I don't have the nature to do this service, then we don't have to feel deprived. No, Krishna's movement is a very big movement. And we can find other devotees who have the same category of interest. Now, this does not mean that we necessarily have to make some radical changes in our life, but it's just that we have to find out where we can serve in a way where the contributions that we are making are valued. And when we find that, then we can move onwards. So I'll conclude with this, with one incident from my life. I primarily see my service to Krishna as writing. Now, 10 to 12 years ago, or maybe 15 years ago, there were not many writers in our movement. Not even in the first generation, what to speak of in the second generation. And when I started writing, you know, what is going to happen by writing? Nothing is going to happen practically. You know, you don't see any visible results generally by writing. So, since my childhood, I used to read in Times of India this column called Speaking Tree, which is about spiritual, there's some spiritual wisdom over there. So then, when I started writing regularly, I just found out the editor of Speaking Tree's address, and I wrote some articles. And then, now Times of India is India's biggest paper. According to some surveys, it is the world's biggest paper, because of course India is one of the, India has among the largest English-speaking populations in the world. So anyway, my article got published. And for me, it was like a childhood dream come true. I was so happy. And then, I told other devotees in the temple, you know, my article has got published in Speaking Tree. So one devotee looked at me and said, how can trees speak? So, you know, I told several devotees, none of the devotees, what is so big about it? They couldn't appreciate it at all. So then, I was very discouraged. You know, it is, I thought it was not just because my dream was fulfilled, but I just thought at that time, as far as I knew, no other ISKCON devotee had written an article in Speaking Tree. So I was the first. So I thought that even from our movement's point of view, it is Krishna Dasha that is coming for the first time. There was no appreciation. Still, I kept writing. And then, once Jayadvaita Maharaj had come to Pune. So, after his class, he had guided me sometime in the writing. So, after my class, after his class, I went to meet him. And I had compiled at that time, I got maybe 10, 15 articles in Speaking Tree and maybe 20, 30 articles in some other newspapers. So, I compiled all of them into a simple spiral bound file, and I showed it to Maharaj. And Maharaj was so happy. He has a bright smile on his face, and he read it, and he went through several articles, and he said, this is good, you could have written it like this. He started reviewing, and his suggestion, he was very happy. And then I told Maharaj that, Maharaj, you know, I would like to write more, but there are so many other services, I have management. Maharaj said, let others do management, you write. So he says, I will talk with Radhe Shyam Prabhu if you want. So then, I did not say anything, after about a month, I had come to Chowpatty. And then Govind Prabhu told me that Jayadvaita Maharaj has given me some books for you from America. So I was stunned. So there are 4 or 5 books on the writing. So I had asked Maharaj at that time, how can I improve my writing? And Maharaj gave me a long list of 25-30 books. Now most of those books at that time, there was no Amazon and everything. There were no books were available in India. So Govind Prabhu told me that actually later on, so Maharaj sent some 5 books through Govind Prabhu. Then I went from here to Juhu. And Bhima Prabhu called me. Bhima Prabhu told me, Jayadvaita Maharaj sent 5 books through me. Then afterwards, I met Rasaraj Prabhu. And Rasaraj Prabhu said, Maharaj sent 5 books for you through me. So, Maharaj, in that way, all the 25 books he sent to me. And because, why he sent from different people? Because nobody's weight should become too much. That's to manage the weight. And then Rasaraj Prabhu told me that, actually, Maharaj was in Berkeley, and both of us went together to the market, and we shopped all these books. So, I was so touched at that time, that next time when I met Jayadvaita Maharaj, I told him, I'm very grateful to you, Maharaj. I was so encouraged. Maharaj said that Prabhupada told me that when I was doing editing for him, Prabhupada told me, do your editing and train others. So, he said, I'm simply carrying on Prabhupada's instruction. So, the point which I was making over here is that all of us have to find out some circle where if we have a particular talents and if there is a particular definition of success within that talents, then we have to find out those who appreciate that definition of success. Then we will blossom in our bhakti. So rather than thinking that I am neglected or nobody cares for me, because in this world everybody is finite. Even the pure devotee has only 24 hours in a day. So it is not that time is going to expand for a pure devotee. So everybody has some limitations. And because of that, we can't expect everyone to have all interests and to take interest in everyone. So we have to, if we have certain inspirations, we have certain ways in which we can serve Krishna, then rather than feeling that, oh, nobody appreciates me, these devotees are partial, you know, they pay more attention to this devotee, not to me, we should find out who has similar interests and then develop a relationship over there. So rather than thinking of this sort of as favoritism as resulting from partiality, we can see it is because of personality. And different devotees have different personalities. And accordingly, they will have different ways in which they want to serve Krishna. So of course, if we are developing a very intimate relationship with some senior devotee, we can always take blessings from our Shiksha Guru or our spiritual counselor or a guide. But the point is, there is no need for us to feel, to let ourselves feel neglected or rejected, or to feel, let ourselves get a negative perception of our authority by thinking that they don't care for me. Rather, it is our responsibility to find out how we can best serve Krishna and then develop the connections by which we can inspire ourselves and rise in our spiritual life. So rather than thinking of this as, rather than thinking of any kind of favoritism as partiality, we can see it as an outgrowth of personality. So we all have our nature, others have their natures, and we have to find out where these natures can intersect and can serve comfortably in that nature. So at the transcendental level, there is no difference. Now whether a person is serving the deities in the pujari department, very close to the deities, or whether someone is just traveling everywhere and spreading the glory of the deities so that people will come to the temple, now, Krishna can have an intimate relationship with everyone at the transcendental level. But when things are manifest in the material world, there will be differences. And we need to not see those differences materially and feel discriminated against. We should see those differences also as opportunities by which we can adjust and learn to serve Krishna. So, Kunti Maharani says, Tvai menanya vishaya mattir madhupate sakrita timudvata dadha gange vaughamudanimati. Just as Ganga flows to the ocean, let my consciousness flow towards you. So it is our responsibility to find out how our consciousness can flow towards Krishna. At one level it is a prayer that Kunti Maharani is offering, and that is good. But along with that, it's our responsibility also. So if we have such emotional blockages, thinking that devotees don't care for me, that senior devotees don't pay attention to me, those will be blockages which are just stopping our consciousness from going towards Krishna. So it is our responsibility to find out how can the consciousness go towards Krishna. If there's a blockage here, okay, find some way from somewhere else. You know, go above, go below, go around, somewhere go ahead. Keep going around. By going about doesn't mean that we are jumping over the authority. Going above means we just find a way ahead. So, you know, I phrase this verse as a chiasmus. Chiasmus is basically a devotee holds nothing back and nothing holds a devotee back. So, nothing holds a devotee back. Yes, there may be obstacles, but we find out some other way in which you keep serving Krishna and keep moving, letting our consciousness move on towards Krishna. And actually, if we take up the responsibility to keep our consciousness moving on towards Krishna, then our personality will develop. Personality not in such a sort of glamour or flamboyance, but personality in terms of our own personal nature and attributes. Krishna has made all of us unique, and there is a reason why we are unique. Now Krishna, we can all serve Krishna in distinctive ways. And if we focus on taking inventory and finding out what we are good at and trying to see how we can make good things out of it, then our own personal nature will grow. So I'll conclude with a small saying, I think, that you know, what we are is God's gift to us. What we become is our gift to God. So rather than feeling jealous, oh, I am like this, I am not like that, we accept that what I am is God's gift to me. But from what I am, I can improve, I can contribute. What we become is our gift to God. And this is the nature of the personal relationship between Krishna and us. So I'll summarize. I started by talking about how nomenclature of chapters depends on individual emphasis of the commentators. Then we discussed about how within the Vedic definition of success, having children is considered a duty, and Krishna demonstrates how he's successful within that definition of success by having so many children. Then we discussed about how does God have favorites? So we discussed from the favoritism that arises from partiality is undesirable. But favoritism that arises from personality is an attribute of personal nature. It is an opportunity for a more personal, intimate connection. And we discussed about the relationship between the cow and Krishna as an example of this. Then in the transcendental realm, every devotee feels fully satisfied in whatever relationship one has with Krishna. We discussed how Manjaris get as much satisfaction as the gopis are getting. Like they can get more satisfaction. So nobody feels left out. Nobody feels that they are missing anything. And then we discussed in the material world, when we are practicing devotional service, yes, there can be favorites which a spiritual master has, but that favorites is not because that spiritual master neglects someone else. It is like good, better, best. So those who take up more responsibility, spiritual master will naturally reciprocate more. And if we want reciprocation, then either we have to develop the abilities by which we can take up more responsibilities to get the association of that devotee, whose association we want, or we find out another sajatiya ashastinga sangha. We find out that a circle of association wherein we can find those who share our definition of success. And I concluded lastly by talking about how we shouldn't let the feelings that I am neglected or rejected become like a blockage, become like a dam that blocks our consciousness from moving towards Krishna. But rather we find whichever way we can keep moving onwards towards Krishna. What we are is Krishna's gift to us. And what we become is our gift to Krishna. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Shila Prabhupada ki. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki. Itai Gaur Premanandi.